Herself clung to her curves like a second skin. Mesh boots, light as air, and with slightly elongated toes, rose to her knees. The suit's collar was high in the back and low in the front. Ludovine had dusted her skin with shimmering paint, and with her hair piled on top of her head and held in place by shell combs and pearl-tipped pins, Riel knew she looked like Saint Nerida herself. The horn blasted for a third time. The water began to churn. Riel took a deep breath and dove under. Chapter 18. Eliana.
My story is the same as all the others. Everyone I love has died. All my nightmares have come to life. Our world is lost, and so are we. There. Will that make a good story for your collection?
Collection of stories written by refugees in occupied Ventera. Curated by Hob Cavacera. After dinner, Eliana claimed a seat in one of the busier common areas of Crown's Hollow and cleaned her knives. From her stool by the fire, she could see everything in the low-ceilinged room. Red Crown soldiers switching watch shifts, supplies being tallied, refugees being carried into the sick wing on makeshift stretchers. According to Simon, they would leave Crown's Hollow in the morning, once fresh horses had arrived. Until then, her spot by the fire was the perfect place to settle and notice everything worth noticing. Most of the passing rebels didn't look twice at her. Maybe Simon had decided it was best to keep word of her identity from spreading. A pity that. Her blades were hungry. Remy lay beside her, head resting on his folded jacket as he read the latest entry in his notebook. Patrick had loaned him a pen. Fresh ink smudged his fingers.
"Can we go to bed yet?" he asked with a yawn.
"No."
"Why not?"
"Too much work to do."
She held up Nox, her crescent-shaped blade, and rubbed at smudges that didn't exist. Remy set his notebook aside.
"You're lying," she smiled at him.
"Am not."
"You're not telling the whole truth, then."
Eliana glanced up as Navi sat down beside them.
"Eliana," Navi said in greeting.
"Your Highness,"
Eliana gave her a mocking bow.
Navi ignored her, looked instead to Remy.
"Hello there, my friend. Did you like your supper?"
Remy nodded and passed Navi his notebook.
"I wrote down the story you told me about Saint Tamarin and the wolf. I changed some things."
"For the better, I'd wager."
Navi scooted closer to him and settled his notebook in her lap.
"I didn't do the story justice."
Remy flushed pink.
"I liked it."
"You know, I think I'm ready for bed after all."
Eliana folded her knives into a rag she'd snatched off a crate.
"Remy, let's go."
He frowned at her.
"But Navi's going to read my story.
I don't care."
"Oh, Eliana." Navi touched Eliana's hand.
"I was hoping we could get to know each other a little."
A taut humming chord inside Eliana gave way. Her surveillance efforts seemed unimportant in the face of a sudden, roaring fury.
"All right, fine,"
she faced Navi, legs crossed, as though they were friends exchanging secrets.
"Remy and I are risking our lives to get you to Astavar. What intelligence are you carrying that's so important?"
Navi's smile was as patient as Eliana's was brittle.
"You know I can't tell you that."
"Where was my mother taken? What's happened to her?"
Remy sat up.
"El, I don't know the answer to that."
"And where was Astavar when Ventera fell?"
Navi's eyes narrowed.
"I'm sorry?
Where was Astavar when the Empire stormed our borders, raped our men, women, and children, burned our libraries and farmlands, executed our king and queen and their children on the steps of St. Govan's Temple in Orléans?"
Her body vibrated with anger. She pressed her palms flat to the floor.
Where was Astavar when my father was killed?
All activity in the room had fallen tensely quiet. Eliana felt the eyes of a dozen rebels upon her.
You were hiding,
Eliana continued, her voice soft.
Hoarding your food and your weapons. Fortifying your borders. You watched us bleed. You heard us scream for help. And did nothing.
I won't apologize for my people doing whatever was necessary to keep themselves alive, Na'vi said at last.
Just as you won't apologize for what you've done to protect your family. And I wouldn't ask you to.
For a moment, Eliana couldn't speak. The truth of Na'vi's words knocked her in the gut.
How can you live with it?
She ignored the memory of Harkin's voice, held out a hand for Remy, and felt a cruel thrill when he obeyed.
Don't talk to me about my family, she said, and stay away from my brother.
She spat on the floor by Na'vi's feet. Then she turned, Remy in hand, pushed past the staring rebels, and left the room.
Ah, Eliana! Patrick looked up from his table in the common room. How lovely to see you up and about at this hour!
Hob, seated beside him, glanced up at her, and scowled at the notebook he was writing in. Eliana hadn't been able to sleep. She'd been lying on the tiny, lumpy pallet she shared with Remy, tensely staring at the ceiling with an iron fist in her stomach and knots turning in her shoulders. She'd borne it for a good hour before giving up. Now she was, what? She didn't know, looking for information. Maybe these rebel saps knew something about the people who'd taken her mother. Looking for a fight? Her body melted a little at the thought. God, yes, a fight would do the trick. She longed to punch something until the skin broke on her indestructible fists. Maybe she could wake up Simon, piss him off. He'd try to hit her, and she'd make him pay for it.
Patrick.
She stepped into the room and nodded at him, a little sheepish, a little soft. The apologetic bounty hunter, finally starting to see the error of her ways. It was almost a funny enough thought to make her laugh right there in front of them.
Hob. I was hoping someone would be awake.
Patrick beckoned her over.
Someone's always awake here. We're peeling potatoes. Well, I'm peeling potatoes. Hob's writing.
Patrick let out an aggrieved sigh.
I'm used to it, though. Doing all the work around here, I mean. You poor overworked darling, said Hob, his voice a deep monotone.
Eliana chuckled and took her earlier seat at the hearth.
And will you not say hello to me?
Eliana jumped to hear Simon's low voice from the shadows. She hadn't noticed him there, slouched in a stained, high-backed chair. Long legs propped up on an overturned crate. He gazed at her over the rim of his glass, blue eyes gleaming in the firelight. Irritated with herself for having missed him, Eliana snapped.
Are you ever not drinking?
With a tiny grin, he mumbled into his glass.
Helps me sleep. Keeps me sharp.
Keeps the voices at bay.
Which is it then?
All.
Or none.
He leaned his head back against the chair, closed his eyes, and let out a long, animal groan of satisfaction.
What about you, Eliana? What voices do you hear in the deep dark of night?
The sound of her name on his lips lingered in the crackling hot air by the fire. Eliana tore her gaze away from his bared throat. Long, silver lines of scar tissue shifted as he swallowed. Then, from the nearest door, a soft voice broke the silence.
Patrick!
Patrick turned, a smile spreading across his face.
Lynette! Shouldn't you be in bed, little one?
A small child, maybe 8 or 9 years old, crept forward from the shadows. A ratty doll clutched in her hands. Bandaged cuts and purple bruises marred her pale skin.
I don't like sleeping, said Lynette.
She climbed into Patrick's lap and stared gravely at Hob's notebook.
I think I'm ready now.
Hob looked up at her.
You don't have to, Lynette.
If you don't want to. The girl's fingers were white around her doll. Her thin lips cracked.
I want to. I promise.
Eliana's throat clenched at the girl's haunted expression.
What are you going to do to her?
She asked sharply. Lynette peered at Eliana through the shadows.
Who are you?
Just a monster. He likes to wear masks, Simon mumbled into his glass. Lynette's eyes widened in alarm. Lynette's going to tell us her story for Hobbs' collection.
Patrick fixed first Simon, then Eliana, with a cutting glare.
And no one's going to interrupt her, are they?
Hob opened his notebook to a fresh page. You're 9 years old, aren't you, love? Lynette kept glancing over at Eliana with something like awe on her face. Her gaze dropped to the knives at Eliana's belt.
Yes,
Hob began writing. Can you tell me your family name? Lynette rested her chin on her doll's head and said nothing.
What about where you lived?
Patrick asked softly. Lynette squeezed her eyes shut and shook her head a little.
That's all right, Hob smiled. You don't have to tell me that.
I don't remember,
Lynette whispered.
I can't remember what I ate for breakfast this morning, Patrick said. An apple, maybe. A hat? A belt buckle? No, that can't be right.
Lynette smiled shyly. She stroked her doll's snarled hair 10 times before she began to speak.
The bad men found us in the morning, she said at last.
Hobbs' pen scratched across the page.
Mama said to be quiet, Lynette continued. So I was, like, playing fox and rabbit. But then Will sneezed right when the bad men were walking outside our door.
Can you tell me who Will is?
Patrick asked. Lynette's mouth screwed up into a mean little bow. For a long moment, she didn't speak. Then,
my brother, she said.
The words hit Eliana like a punch to the jaw. Suddenly, Lynette wasn't Lynette. She was Remy, frail and tiny, telling a story he should never have had to tell. The skin on Eliana's wrist began to itch, right where the old refugee woman had touched her.
Don't look at them.
Don't look. She shot out of her chair, ready to storm for the door. She didn't have to listen to this. She wouldn't listen to this. But Simon grabbed her arm, held her fast. He said nothing. The icy look on his face was enough to stop her in her tracks. She glared at him, fuming. She could start a fight, kick herself free, put a stop to story time, and give this poor girl a show. Instead, she settled back onto the hearth beside Simon. He wanted her to listen? For whatever malicious reason he'd concocted? Fine. She would listen. And later, she'd make him regret it.
The door was already smashed, Lynette was saying, because we had a party with Mama. She said, let's have a mess party.
A mess party? Patrick whistled low. That sounds fun. What is that?
That's when you make your house dirty instead of clean, Lynette explained.
That sounds like the best kind of party I could possibly imagine.
Lynette bit her lip.
We set fire to the garden and let our animals go loose. And then Mama, she smashed the windows with an axe. It made her cry doing it, because Papa loved those windows.
Hob glanced up, his face soft. Why did he love them? Lynette shook her head slowly, back and forth, back and forth.
Because, she whispered after a moment, I painted them.
Eliana looked away, toward the dying fire. The air in this place was stale, sour. Too many people with unwashed bodies and rotting hurts. She breathed in and tasted death on her tongue. An ill knot was expanding in her belly, forcing its way up through her chest. Her mother's words returned to her. If you don't learn to tuck away that sick feeling,
It will consume you.
She closed her eyes, clenched her fists. The fire was too near, too hot. Her skin crawled from it. The heat siphoned all the air from her lungs. She should never have left her bed.
Why are you making me stay for this?
She asked, her voice tight and low. Because I can, Simon replied, and then downed the rest of his drink.
We tore up our beds and our pillows,
Annette was whispering faster now.
He made red dye from berries and painted the walls. Mama said,
Patrick glanced at Hob. Maybe we should stop for now.
No,
Lynette flung away her doll. It hit the wall and dropped to the floor.
Mama said it had to look real.
She gasped a little, like her own words were choking her. With nothing now to hold on to, she clutched the table's edge, stared fiercely at it.
Mama said it had to look like people died there. We were hiding, and the bad men came, and Will sneezed, because he sneezes when he gets excited. And I was crying. I couldn't help it. Mama said, hush. She held her hands over my mouth.
The girl was having trouble breathing. She looked around, wild-eyed, and then, before Eliana had time to prepare herself, Lynette scrambled off Patrick's lap and ran to her. She slammed into Eliana's front, threw her arms around her neck, and buried her face in Eliana's braid. She clung there, her little bird's body trembling like it was ready to crack. Her breath came in frantic gasps against Eliana's ear.
Mama said, Lynette whispered over and over. Mama said, hush. Mama said, please, be quiet.
Eliana couldn't move, could hardly breathe with this weight she didn't ask for, hanging from her neck. She wanted to shove the girl off her, then rip Hob's notebook from his hands and throw it into the fire.
It will consume you.
Breathing thinly through her nose, she tamped down the rising panic, winging hard up her throat. She didn't think of Remy, probably tossing with nightmares down the hall. He'd never slept away from home, not once in his life. Didn't think of her dead father, her vanished mother, the soft way they'd looked at each other before war ripped them apart. Didn't think of Harkin and his warm bed, the scent of him, like coming home. A girl couldn't think of these things, couldn't think about teary-eyed children and their tragic stories, not if she was also a killer. I am the dread of Orlean. Then what happened? Eliana asked. Her voice came out thick, not the hollow, flat thing she'd tried for. And she hated herself for it. She needed to get out of this room before it ate her alive.
I will not be consumed.
They marched inside,
Annette whispered.
I saw wings on their chests. That's the Empire's sign.
She turned her face into Eliana's neck.
Did you know that?
Yes.
Eliana's collar grew wet beneath Lynette's chin. The heat of the fire licked up her back. What was the old prayer? For Saint Marzana, the firebrand. Remy would know.
I did know that.
Ah, yes. She remembered the prayer now. Burn steady and burn true. Burn clean, and burn bright. She stared across the room at Hob and Patrick, hoped her unblinking bright glare made them squirm.
They took Mama by her hair,
Lynette said,
and dragged her into the back room. She was screaming so loud, it hurt my ears. And Will, he's big. He beat the bad men, had one of his fits when he starts spitting and hollering. And he looked at me, and...
She didn't say anything after that. She pressed her face tight against Eliana's neck, shivering.
He told you to run,
Eliana finished for her.
He gave you time to run.
Then she unfolded the girl from her body, lowered her to the floor. Patrick was there immediately with the abandoned doll and a quiet endearment. Eliana pushed past them both to Hobb's table. Rage snapped up her body like the lash of a whip. "Why did you do this?" she jerked her head at Lynette, now cradled in Patrick's arms. "Why make her relive it?" Hobb watched her calmly.
"She wanted me to write it down, so she wouldn't forget."
"How many do you have?"
1,325. "I've filled 12 books so far. People come through here. They have stories to tell. Some of them want me to write them down. Some write them down for me."
Hobb took a deep breath.
"I think someone ought to know about them. About everyone. Even if it's only me and Patrick."
Eliana eyed the notebook and its gnarled pages with disdain.
"It's a waste of time," she spat. "Writing stories for the living dead."
Then she left them, Lynette calling faintly after her. The girl didn't even know her name.
"Mama?"
Eliana stormed out into the cramped, dark corridor and around the first corner, then subsided against the wall, her heart drumming for an escape and her hands shaking. She fisted them in her jacket, bit down hard on her tongue. It had been a mistake to leave Orlean, to strike her bargain with Simon, to drag Remy along with them. Reckless and sloppy. She should have gone from her mother's empty bed straight to Lord Arkellion's door and demanded he help bring her home.
"I will not be consumed."
She'd been a loyal servant of the Empire for years, hadn't she?
"I will not be consumed."
Maybe that would be enough for them to accept her back. That and the map of Crown's Hollow now living in her brain.
"It seems the Dread has a heart after all,"
said Simon, appearing around the corner so silently that she startled. She managed a tiny laugh, thinking fast. He could not suspect, or he'd shoot her on the spot.
"Is it such a shocking thing to imagine?"
Simon lightly touched the crook of her arm, and there was a fragility to the movement that surprised her. The fire-warmed heat of his body suffused her own.
"Come," he murmured. "I'll walk you to your room."
It was a quiet walk, and by the time they reached her door, Eliana had coaxed the proper fall of tears from her eyes. She turned her face up to Simon, gave him a good view. Her mother had told her that her beauty would make working for the Empire both easier and harder. This time, it made things easier. She saw the shift on his face as he looked at her, tiny but obvious. A softening. And a craving. A thread of triumph unspooled in her belly. "Farewell, wolf. May death find you at your greatest moment of joy."
"Remy always says there's hope for me yet, even after everything I've done," she said quietly.
Forlorn was the word.
"I'm not sure he's right,"
she laughed, her eyes full. Simon shifted, hesitated, then cupped her face in one large, calloused hand. His touch was so delicate it sent a chill down Eliana's front, despite her new resolve to end him.
"People like us don't fight for our own hope," he said quietly. "We fight for everyone else's."
Then he opened her door a crack and stepped aside.
"Good night, Eliana,"
he said, then swiftly moved past her and was gone. Eliana entered the room and shut the door behind her. Once inside, her face hardened to stone, and her heart along with it. She wiped her cheeks dry and gave Remy a gentle shake.
"Remy, wake up!"
He turned, grunting.
"El, what is it?" "Stay quiet. Get out of bed and put on your boots." "Why?" "We're leaving."
In the dark, her smile was vicious. but she kept her voice kind. Simon needs our help on a very important mission.
Chapter 19. Riel. O seas and rivers, O rain and snow, quench us our thirst, cleanse us our evil, grow us the fruit of our fields, drown us the cries of our enemies. The Water Rite, as first uttered by Saint Nerida the Radiant, patron saint of Meridian and water workers. The trial's rules were simple. Hidden in the bay were three items. When assembled, they would form a trident, a replica of Saint Nerida's casting. Riel was to retrieve and assemble the trident and present it for all to see before the ocean ate her alive. Simple. Except the water was damned cold, and Grand Magister Rosier and his acolytes were making it angry. Riel kicked up to the surface to gain her bearings and was promptly pulled back under by a black wave 20 feet tall. Swimming hard, she pushed herself up and gasped for air before another wave knocked her back into the water. This would get her nowhere. She remembered Tal's words. Don't be afraid to fight. In fact, though, she was afraid. When Riel was a child and Tal had held her under the water in the baths, she'd at first fought him. She'd known at once that he was testing her, but with her lungs burning, her panic so desperate she thought she might die from it, she had been ready to do anything for the chance to breathe again. Looking up through the clear, soft water, she'd seen Tal's blurry figure hunched over her. She had imagined his voice, guiding her through her lessons. The Imperium is in all living things. Think of it like tiny crystals, forming the basis of everything that is. The goal, then, is to reach with your power beyond the visible, beyond the surface of things, to take hold of the Imperium itself, the grains of life, finer than sand, and change it. Lungs burning just as they had that day years ago, Riel closed her eyes in the swirling dark sea and recited the water rite. Her body cried out for air, and she ignored it. I'm sorry, Riel, Tal had sobbed after releasing her. He'd held her small, choking body, breathed into her mouth to help her recover her air, tucked her soaked head under his chin. Forgive me, please, forgive me.
I did well, didn't I?
She'd smiled up at him, coughing up water.
Tal, I didn't lose control. I saw the water, the bits of water. They were small and pretty, and I saw them, and I wasn't afraid.
Tossed about beneath the waves, her body burning and her vision fading, Riel remembered Tal's stricken, confused face. After, in his office, as she sat sipping a cup of tea beneath a blanket, he'd combed her hair smooth, then held her until she finally stopped shivering.
You saw it, didn't you?
He whispered, awestruck. Cozy in his arms, she'd mumbled sleepily.
Saw what?
The Imperium. She'd wrinkled her nose and looked up at him.
Didn't you see it too?
But no, he hadn't. And he wouldn't. Seeing the Imperium with one's own eyes was not a thing others enjoyed. Riel had seen the truth of that in Tal's marveling gaze, felt it in how reverently he helped her back home and into her own bed. In the water, remembering that day, Riel's mind cleared and settled.
You saw it, didn't you?
Yes, she had. Her power itched to surface, and she let it rise.
I must breathe in this water. So I will.
Riel opened her eyes and saw the water of the bay strewn through with countless flecks of golden light. So tiny that when she focused on them, they melded into a solid, brilliant sheen. The Imperium. She blinked. The gold faded. But she was not alone here. The Imperium was all around her, brushing against her mind like tendrils reaching for her, calling to her. her mind focused and clear, her lungs burning, she pushed out with her thoughts, moving the water away from her body until she was surrounded by a hair-thin shell of air. It held, but it wouldn't forever. Already she could feel the shell cracking, the weight of the waves pressing down on it as though against a thin pane of glass. A dull ache pulsed through her muscles, her mind stretched and shifted like someone had reached into her skull and was reshaping the deep, dark place behind her eyes.
"Your power is a miracle, Riel,"
said Corian, his voice tinged with awe.
"I don't understand it. Help me understand."
Riel kicked hard and dove deeper. The first item was easy. A three-pronged trident head, sharp-tipped and silver, lying in a cluster of seaweed on the ocean floor. Riel kicked her way down, the pressure of the storming water making her ears throb. She grabbed the middle prong, and her palm lit up with pain. Her blood clouded the water. The shell around her body wavered. Riel recalled the story of Saint Nerida in the final battle at the gate, how she had used her trident to impale the angel Razorak through his gut. His scream was loud enough that the seabirds along the northern Seldarian coast had dropped dead from the skies. "Focus, Riel," she told herself, furious that she'd grabbed the prong without thinking. But then the sight of her own hand grasping the trident head gave her a burst of inspiration. The people above, waiting for her to drown, would remember the stories of Saint Nerida too. Riel pushed herself off the seabed, kicking hard until she burst out of the water and thrust the trident head high into the air. Sheets of rain, thrown from a sky churning with clouds, slapped her cheeks. Light shone down upon where Riel bobbed in the waves. Acolytes from the House of Light cast bright beams of sunlight from the cliff tops. Riel turned her face up to the warmth, and once the crowd saw her, triumphantly holding the first piece of the trident, her sliced hand bleeding down her arm, a roar of cheers exploded. And though her protective shell of air muffled the sound, Riel heard enough to know the truth. They hadn't expected her to emerge after so long underwater. But now she had. And now anything was possible. Riel grinned and dove back down. Once underwater, her air shell constricted, twisting about her body like a rag being wrung out. She choked, her throat tightening. She closed her eyes and fought for enough calm to pray. "Grow us the fruit of our fields," she opened her eyes, glared at the angry black depths. "Drown us the cries of our enemies," she reached for the Imperium. "Follow me. Obey me." Warmth snapped at her fingers and toes. Was the Imperium listening? Her focus renewed. She swam, searching the murky water for clues. But she saw only churning silt and salt, the occasional flitting shape of a swimming creature. Then, a hulking darkness solidified in the watery shadows. A sunken ship, half submerged in shifting sand and glowing faintly from within. It was worth a try. Riel swam closer. The dense current of the water moved ever faster, flinging her wildly through swirling eddies one moment and pushing against her as a solid wall the next. Inside the ship's cracked hull was an eerie, half-lit land. Luminescent pink barnacles clung to the walls and ceiling. She swam through the captain's quarters, the galley, a storeroom choked with fish that darted away at her approach. There, a twinkling light caught her eye. A gemstone, fist-sized and an inky blue in the darkness, winked at her from the floor of the ship. Saint Nerida's sapphire. It would fasten to the end of the trident's staff. Riel grabbed the sapphire, slipped it into her pocket, then froze. The shimmering, rose-colored light suffusing the ship was suddenly brighter than it had been a few moments before. Slowly, Riel turned, and her stomach clenched in horror.
The luminescent barnacles that had carpeted the walls, lighting her way, weren't barnacles at all. They were jellyfish. A swarm of them, cat-sized and glowing pink with bright, bruise-purple centers. Sizzling light zapped between the fuzzy ends of their tentacles. Panicking, Riel kicked to push herself away from them. Something sharp jabbed her leg from behind. She whirled around in the water. They were surrounding her, drifting closer, inexorably, as if attracted to her rising terror. One of them bumped against her arm. A piercing, hot sting jolted her. Another found her temple, her bleeding hand. They swarmed, reaching. Knots of glowing tentacles blocked her view of the ship and the sea beyond it. She forgot all her prayers and lessons and screamed. The scream broke her shell of air. The water closed in around her, cruel and cold. She realized the change too late and gasped, choking on the sea. Desperation forced her to move. She swam, wild, clumsy, swiped the trident head through the jellyfish, felt the prongs pierce something thick and gelatinous. A tentacle wrapped around her ankle, her unhurt arm. She reached back with the trident and sliced through them, tugged herself free. She pushed and clawed, the swarms, angry lights cutting across her vision. She hoped her suit was offering her some protection, but already her vision was dimming. Air, air, air! She made it out of the boat, reaching desperately for the surface. Her feet were numb, clumsy. She couldn't tell what her body was doing, just knew she had to get up. Get up! Get out! She burst out of the water, coughing hard. A wave pushed her under. She flailed, flipped over, found a burst of strength, climbed back up. Sweet saints! The air was glorious, pure and cold in her aching lungs. The rain beat down on her. Another wave pushed her under, and another right after. She emerged again and looked around wildly. Where were the cliffs? Where were the sun-spinner acolytes with their beams of light? She saw blackness, shifting and growing all around her. No sky, no clouds. The blackness, she realized with a burst of fear, was waves. She dove, groped her pocket until she felt the hard gemstone safely tucked away. She swam, searched the water, surfaced, and dove again. Were they watching her up above? Could they see her? She must have looked absurd, soaked and bleeding, suit torn, skin raised in angry welts. You can do this, came Corian's voice. His presence was calm and still. You can do so much more than this.
Can I?
She wanted to sink to the seabed and cry.
Unless you're going to help me, leave me be.
His voice vanished. She was alone. She couldn't possibly find the focus to recreate her precious shell. So she resurfaced and dove. Resurfaced and dove. Her eyes were on fire from the salt. She could see nothing in this churning black water. And then, how long had it been? Minutes? Days? Her body was one massive, searing throb of pain. She saw it. It was chance, really. An overhead swing of one of the sun spinner's light beams. Something long and thin glinted, then vanished. Thrust into a rise in the seabed, closer to the surface than the other pieces had been, stood the trident's shaft. She dove for it, all her focus narrowing in on this one spot. A force rose up within her, something eager and hot and familiar. And as it raced up through her body, firing her blood alive, the ocean around her flashed gold once more. She understood now. It was easy, with the Imperium lighting the way. Move the water. Create a path. The next thing she knew, she was no longer swimming. She was running. Her mind clear and blazing hot. Water shot up on either side of her. She was carving a path through it. She reached the trident's shaft and stood, panting on the ocean floor.
Around her, the water was a narrow, roaring tunnel, spewing water into the air above like a geyser. But here, on the seabed, everything was quiet, softly floating, softly black and blue and gold. Riel stood in the tranquility of it, assembled the trident with shaking hands, attached the prongs to the shaft, the gemstone to the end. She grasped it and looked up. A column of water led straight up into the air, a path she had carved in that last desperate swim without even realizing she was doing it. A savage pleasure swelled within her. I did this. Me and no one else. And how does it feel? Corian asked quietly. His presence hovered at the door to her mind. I feel... She couldn't articulate it. Standing there, looking up at the chaos of the water gripped by her power, she could only gape and revel in it and exist. I feel... A small fear twisted in her breast, but she couldn't listen to that now, when everything felt so... so... She closed her eyes, shivering. The air around her vibrated with warmth. Beyond that, the sea churned, relentless and cold. Sprays of water kissed her cheeks. Corian's voice was as gentle as her father's long-ago embrace. Tell me, Riel.
I feel... alive.
And you are? You are more alive than anyone. But then the small fear grew. It reared up and shouted. What might this display have done, up on the surface? Terror crashed through her body. Her triumph faded, her focus shattered. The water followed soon after. It slammed down upon her like the force of 1,000 fists and flung her to the ocean floor. She floated there, stunned, her head ringing. Rise up, Riel, Corian urged her.
I can't.
You did it. You're almost finished. Riel watched the trident sink beside her, her eyes closed. With no small amount of irritation, Corian said, Your friends are worried sick for you, Riel. Especially that boy.
Audric, Riel groped for the trident. Ludovine.
Yes, Corian said. Nastily now. Go to them. Ease their pain. They love you so. Riel forced her eyes open, lungs burning, vision dimming. She pushed herself up. She kicked and fought, clawing through cold water. And when she burst up above the waves, she remembered to hold the completed trident above her head. The sun spinner's beams shone down upon her. Her arms shook under the trident's weight, but she held it fast. This time, the crowd's roar was deafening. In an instant, the rain stopped. The waves flattened and calmed, clouds rolling away to reveal a mild blue sky. Riel saw through her burning eyes the nearby pier, crowded with figures. One dove into the water, swiftly heading her way. Those still on the pier shouted after whoever it was. Riel could hardly swim, the trident slowing her. She'd only gone a few feet when a strong arm gathered her up against a body that radiated so much warmth it could only belong to one person.
Audric,
Riel whispered, clinging to him, her limbs trembling from exhaustion.
You feel nice.
He let out shaky laughter. We need to get you to my healer. You're cold as ice.
Thank God, you're here.
She squinted up at him as he awkwardly swam back to shore with one arm, her body tucked against him with the other.
I'm tired of swimming.
What's all over you? Riel looked blearily at her hands.
Oh, jellyfish attacked me. The water workers made them angry, maybe.
God, Riel. Audric's voice broke. I'm so sorry.
Don't worry, I stabbed them. The jellyfish, not the water workers.
She glared wearily at the pier, where the acolytes waited.
Though that's still a possibility.
He laughed again, then said quietly, Riel?
Yes.
Were you frightened? She closed her eyes and whispered,
Yes.
His arms tightened sweetly around her, his mouth warm against her temple.
I wish I could.
Your Highness! A water worker acolyte knelt on the edge of the pier and extended his hand. He stared at Riel like she was Saint Nerida, risen from the dead. Audric ignored the man, gently detaching himself from Riel. Here, I'll help you up.
No.
Riel grabbed the edge of the pier and turned in the water to face him.
They need to see me stand on my own.
He smiled and handed her the trident.
Your prize, my lady.
She squeezed his hand, then shakily climbed up the pier, refusing the assistance offered her by Grand Magister Rosier, his acolytes, even Tal. On her own 2 feet she stood, swaying slightly, and looked up at the thousands of people lining the cliffs, waving their arms, pumping their fists, shouting her name. When she raised the trident in both hands, their cheers became thunderous. She turned to face the magisterial council, who had gathered on the pier. Tal beamed, his eyes alight with pride. Sloane stood at his side with her arms crossed, a thoughtful frown on her face, her short dark hair plastered to her pale cheeks. And beside her stood the Archon, beads of rainwater sliding down his implacable face. Riel handed him the trident with a grin she knew was gracelessly cocky. But she didn't care one bit.
Your move, she said with a slight bow. Your Holiness.
Chapter 20 Eliana. Dark-hearted Tamarin had never seen anything good come by daylight. With her daggers, she carved shadows from every corner and hollow. She breathed life into their gasping mouths, twined them around her limbs and neck, tied their newborn fingers into the ends of her hair. There the shadows whispered secrets to her, in gratitude, and so she was never alone, and always safe in the shroud of night. The Book of the Saints. Sneaking out of Crown's Hollow during the perimeter guard's shift change had been dispiritingly easy. Even the tense 2-mile trek through the wild, thinking that every rustle of leaves was a Red Crown scout, or worse, Simon, had gone more quickly than Eliana had hoped. Remy believed her story. Simon, she told him, had gone on a mission for the nearest Empire outpost to retrieve an important piece of information for Na'vi. He had left Eliana instructions. If he hadn't returned within 2 hours, they were to come to his aid.
Even me? Remy had asked. Especially you?
His eyes had narrowed.
Why?
Because you're sweet-looking, and no one will suspect you of lies. You can sneak around in very small spaces, and you're a storyteller. You can improvise as I need you to.
And we can't tell the others?
No.
Why?
Simon said not to. Don't ask me to explain his choices. I couldn't possibly begin to.
Remy didn't look convinced, but at least he wasn't arguing. So far, so good. But getting an audience with Lord Mowbray without being killed for betraying the Empire, that would be a challenge, even for the Dread.
Maybe they don't really mind that much that I helped the Rebellion's most notorious soldier push one of the Emperor's personal assassins out of a tower.
It was a nice thought. Eliana scanned the moonlit forest, shifting her weight from one foot to the other. Her muscles burned from the sustained crouch, but it was a good burn. It reminded her, no more rebels, no more sad stories or lost princesses, no more Simon.
"Is that him?"
Remy whispered beside her. They'd been waiting outside the Empire outpost for 2 hours, watching for the arrival of Lord Morbray, as the trees around them shivered in mist and the night sky inched toward a grey dawn. And now, as Eliana looked back at the outpost through a net of wet branches, she saw what Remy had seen. A convoy approached the perimeter wall, 10 mounted Adatrochs, a coach pulled by 4 horses. A door in the wall opened, admitting torchlight from within. So, the Red Crown intelligence had been accurate, she hoped.
"Looks like a general's escort to me," Eliana whispered.
Remy stared up at her from within the hood of his cloak, shivering even with the thick night steaming around them.
"Maybe we should go back."
Eliana turned to him, bracing herself.
"Listen carefully.
We're not here to help Simon." Remy blinked.
"What?"
"I'm going to negotiate with Lord Morbray for information about Mother, and for amnesty for all of us. At least until I can get you to Astavar. Then, I don't care what they do to me."
"You... what?"
Remy's face clouded over. He stepped back from her.
"You lied to me!"
Eliana sighed, glanced quickly at the outpost.
"Yes, and you'd think you'd be used to that by now. You're going to give them information about Crown's Hollow."
"Remy," she reached for him and he slapped her hand away.
"What's wrong with you?" he whispered. "All those people, the refugees, they do the same thing in my position. They do whatever it took to keep their family alive and safe."
Remy shook his head, took another 2 steps away from her.
"You're wrong. Some would, not all. I wouldn't."
A call from the outpost distracted her. She turned, squinting through the shadows. Then Remy grabbed Arabeth from her belt and ran.
"Remy!"
she called after him as loudly as she dared. Behind her, one of the horses pulling the coach whickered and stamped its foot. She looked to the outpost, then back out at the swamp. Remy's small form disappeared into the gloom, running toward Crown's Hollow. She had to chase him down. None of this was worth it if they were separated. She stood, heard a twig snap behind her, and froze. A male voice asked mildly,
"What's this?"
Slowly, Eliana turned. A uniformed man stood a few paces away, silhouetted by the torchlight of the outpost's perimeter wall. Behind him stood a dozen Adatrochs, rifles aimed at her heart. Eliana put her hands in the air.
"My name is Eliana Ferrocora," she called out. "I am the Dread of Orlean. I was taken captive by Red Crown soldiers and escaped. I have intelligence you'll want."
Silence, then. The tree bugs hovering above her head rattled and droned. Sweat itched along her brow.
"And what," said the man, "will you want in exchange for this intelligence?"
"Safe passage for myself and my brother back to Orlean. A guarantee of amnesty, and the return of my mother as well. She was abducted from her bed 2 weeks ago. I want her back, alive and whole."
The man stood in silence for another moment, then approached her. As he moved closer, the shadow shivered away to reveal a reedy, clean-shaven man with light brown skin and short, dark hair. Like all the Empire's generals, like the Emperor himself, his eyes shone as black as a deep hollow in the ground. Whatever drugs the Emperor fed his dogs to alter their appearance so drastically must have been truly monstrous. Eliana met his gaze without flinching.
"Lord Morbray?"
He smiled, held out one leather-gloved hand. The gathered Adatrochs lowered their weapons.
"Welcome home, Dread,"
said Lord Morbray, voice thin and cream smooth.
"Come, tell me your secrets, He led her through the prison first. Every Empire outpost had one, and though this one was small and plain compared to the elaborate dungeons below Lord Arkellion's palace in Orlean, it was distinctive in one way. Instead of cells, the long, narrow rooms were lined with small, square cages that required the grown adults within to sit hunched. But not all were adults. Some were children. Grotesquely thin, bellies swollen, skin red from scratching, lips crusted with blood and vomit. They watched Eliana as she passed. The newer ones, not so thin or broken, glared viciously, spat through the mesh of their cages. The ones who had been there for a while, filth-encrusted skin, matted hair, gaunt-faced, said nothing at all, staring blankly. At a turn in the wall, a small child slammed into the door of her cage and gripped the mesh with bony white fingers. Her eyes were furious, the skin around them red and raw.
"Help us!" she shouted, shaking the door. The metal cut into her hands. "Get me out of here! Get me out!"
"Is there a point to showing me all this?" Eliana asked, sounding bored, but her blood raged hot inside her.
"May Tamarin the Cunning grant you a swift and painless death, child," she thought.
"I wanted to show you what will happen to you," Lord Mowbray replied, "should you decide to cross me during your stay here."
Then he opened a door into a small, plain room. One chair, one flickering lamp. He held out his hands for her knives.
"You may wait inside."
Eliana peered within, raised an unimpressed eyebrow, but her mind raced with panic. She didn't have time to wait in a cell. Remy would tell Simon everything, and they would come for her, guns blazing. They'd shoot her immediately. She needed to tell Lord Mowbray, help him prepare his soldiers to counter the rebels' assault. But not before she had gotten what she wanted from him. She placed her knives into his waiting hands.
"I get an actual room, then? Not a dung-smeared cage?"
Lord Mowbray's smile did not reach his eyes.
"Only the best for the dread of Orlean. I hope you're hungry."
When he closed the door, Eliana was left alone and uncertain. She sat on the chair in the middle of the room and waited.
"So, Eliana Ferrocora,"
Lord Mowbray reclined in his chair, brought a glass of wine to his lips. Over the rim of his glass, his eyes watched her, black and unblinking.
"I'm listening."
Eliana continued cutting her venison. Blood spilled onto her plate with each press of her knife. They'd kept her in that cell for maybe 2 hours before calling her into his lordship's dining room. She tried not to think of the cage-filled prison, the screaming little girl with the desperate eyes. She tried not to think of Remy or of Simon. Was he on his way by now? Or would they assume Lord Mowbray would kill her himself and write her off as dead? What would Remy think? Would he be glad to be rid of her? And what would happen to her mother? Eliana imagined scraping clean her circling thoughts with the edge of a blade.
"There is a Red Crown compound," she began, bored. 2 miles southwest of here. They call it Crown's Hollow."
She brought a bite to her lips, chewed, swallowed, looked up at Lord Mowbray and smiled.
"What a delicious meal you prepared for me. I'm grateful. Rebels don't have much in the way of fine cuisine."
Lord Mowbray's laugh was barely audible. He snapped his fingers. One of the Adatrochs standing guard around the dining room moved to refill Lord Mowbray's glass. Eliana watched in silence as Lord Mowbray drank and drank. He snapped his fingers once more. Another glass refilled. He gulped it down like a desert wanderer, then slammed the glass onto the table. Curled his lip, picked up his fork and knife, violently cut his venison, crammed bite after bite into his mouth without pausing to breathe. At last he stopped, took another gulp of his wine, and sat staring at his plate in disgust.
More meat, he told the nearest Adatrox. Not this.